This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is the Relic Radio Show with another 60 minutes of fine radio drama from the golden age of radio. We're going to take care of a couple of suggestions this week. They're both for suspense, so I figured I'd put them together, have 60 minutes of this great series. We're going to hear first, it's actually the second episode of Suspense. It's titled Wet Saturday, first aired June 24th, 1942. And it's a quick Believe It or Not break with Killjoy before our second episode of Suspense titled Hide and Seek. It aired May 13th, 1962.
The Columbia Network takes pleasure in bringing you Suspense. Suspense, a new series of programs with one strict purpose in view, your entertainment. Each week at this time, CBS sets aside 30 minutes to excite you, to mystify you, and on occasion to horrify you with a catalog of the world's great thrillers, dramas from the stage and screen, from fiction and radio, dramas that bring you suspense. This, the second offering of a new series, is a unique one. Certainly, it is one of the very few pieces of suspense literature that somehow manages to tickle your funny bone while busily engaged in tingling your spine. Make no mistake, though, nobody's kidding. CBS presents its adaptation of John Collier's well-known short story, Wet Saturday.
Yes, it's a wet Saturday. Never saw it rain harder. I'm Princey, Frederick Princey, just an ordinary family man. I have a son, a daughter, and a wife. I might be out golfing now if it hadn't been for the rain.
I'm Mrs. Princey. I plan to drive over to the nurseries this afternoon for some arbiters. The boarders, you know. But
oh, the whole lot of them make me sick. Yes, I'm George, son and heir. I had a date to go punting. Couldn't find the blasted punt in this weather, so I'm home too.
I'm Millicent. I was going to play croquet. That's how I happened to have the marriage.
Yes, that's the Princey family. We find them at home. Mrs. Princey, Millicent, George sprawled on a couch, Mr. Princey biting on a dry pipe. Their living room is dull and overstuffed. Rain beats at the windows. They are any middle-class family at home on a wet day, except for one small item. As you sit with them in the living room, you can see through the door to the front porch a pair of men's feet encased in black boots. They look like the feet of a curate. There's a tenseness in the room. The air is charged with excitement. But the feet are very still.
Don't keep staring at them. Listen to me, all of you. Don't you see? They'd hang her. That's what they do. They'd hang her.
Oh, Fred, it's too awful.
Awful? Catastrophic? A supposedly sweet, gentle, intelligent girl, respected, loved by the whole village, doing a thing like this. Think of the publicity, the disgrace. Do you think I'm going to resign from the bench, the festival, sell out and live in some foggy hotel abroad? Oh, no, no.
No. No, I'll kill myself. I will. I will.
Don't be a fool.
Any more than you have been, the governor being.
Be quiet. Wouldn't be so bad if it were you. Everybody in the village knows you are not responsible. George.
Yes?
Get off that couch. Sit up on your spine. Might be of a little use here if you could think.
Listen, Governor, this isn't my funeral.
Oh, shut up. Long as I can remember, George, you've been a trial and a tribulation to me.
Oh, I can't stand it. I can't stand it.
You've got to stand it, my dear. And keep that hysterical note out of your body. You hear?
Yes.
We are talking about the weather. Now, George.
Yeah?
George, if he fell down the old well, say, striking his head several times, what about it, eh?
I really don't know, Governor. What about it?
Don't be an ass. I'm asking you to think. He'd have had to hit the side several times in 30 or 40 feet and at all the correct angles. No, I'm afraid not. We'll have to go over it all again.
Oh, no, Father. No. I couldn't.
Millicent, we must go over it all again.
Oh, Fred, you're torturing me.
Oh, face facts, Mater. With him lying there, there's no use pretending it's a picnic.
They might hang you, Millicent. Oh, stop that shaking. Stop it here. You must stop it. Keep your voice quiet. Millicent, we are talking of the weather. Now, we will proceed.
I can't. Talk about boots.
Oh, should have thought of those boots, Millie. I'm not moving them.
Well, sit up, George. Stop shuffling your feet. Now, Millicent, look at me. Answer me truthfully, you hear? Answer me. You were in the croquet court. Who knew you were in love with this wretched curate?
Who? Oh, the whole village. They've been sniggering about it at the pub for 3 years past.
Millicent, we continue. You were on the croquet court.
Yes.
You were putting the croquet set into its box.
Yes. It was starting to rain. I was carrying the balls and Madison to the sun porch. The box was there.
You heard someone enter the garden gate and come across the yard?
Yes.
Could you see who it was?
No, not at first. I was going into the sun porch. I threw down all the mallets but the red one and turned around.
It was with us?
Yes.
So you called him?
Yes.
Loudly? Did you call him loudly? Could anyone have heard?
No, Father, I'm sure not. I didn't really call him. I just spoke his name. He saw me as I went to the door. He just waved his hand and came over.
How can I find out from you whether there was anyone about? Whether he could have been seen?
I'm sure not, Father. I'm quite sure.
So, you both went into the front porch?
Yes. It was raining hard then.
What did he say?
He said, "Hello, Millie." And excuse his coming in the back way, but he set out to walk over to Liston.
Yes.
And he said, passing the park and seeing the house, suddenly thought of me. And thought he'd just look in for a moment. He had something to tell me.
Go on.
He said he was so happy. He wanted me to share it. He'd heard from the bishop. He was to have a vicarage. And it wasn't only that. It meant he could marry. Then he began to stutter and get all confused. And of course, I thought he meant me.
Don't tell me what you thought. Tell me exactly what he said. Nothing else.
Well,
oh, stop crying. It's a luxury you can no longer afford. Tell me what happened.
He said, no. He said it wasn't me. It's Ella Bracken Davis. And he was sorry. And all that. Then he went to go.
And then?
I went back. He turned his back. I had the red mallet of the croquet bag in my hand. I forgot to drop it in the box that he closed.
Did you shout or scream? I mean, as you hit him?
No. No, I'm sure I didn't.
Did he? Come on, speak up.
No, Father.
And then?
I threw it down. I came straight in here. I went to look for Mother. Oh,
poor Ben.
No. No, I will leave the child alone, Ben.
Not such a child, Mater. Millie, I had no idea
Keep
you
were... Quiet. I'm thinking. You see, George, he probably told people he was going to Lisbon. Certainly no one knows he came here, for he didn't decide until he crossed the park. He might have been attacked in the woods. We must consider every detail. A curate with his head battered in.
Don't, Father. Don't.
A curate, head battered in. Now, who would want to kill with
him? Oh, kill with him? Well, I would with pleasure. How do you do, Mrs. Prinsley?
Captain.
Oh, sit down, pray. Mustn't get up for me, Mrs. Prinsley. You either, Mrs. My word. Just being neighborly on a bad day. I wanted to ask you about those dahlia bulbs, Prinsley. Took a shortcut on account of the rain and walked right in. Knew you wouldn't mind.
Oh, he heard you, Father.
All have our little jokes. Don't pretend to be shocked.
This way, Smollett. This chair, facing the fireplace. Sit down, Mother.
We're just straightening the curtains to the sun porch, dear. It looks so gloomy out there. Might as well shut the rain out.
Just talking about a little theoretical cure killing, Smollett. You know, young people these days like thrillers.
Parts on his side. Justifiable parts on his side. Have you heard about Ella Bragdon, David? I shall be most properly laughed at.
Why? Why should you be laughed at, Mollet?
No, I'm a shot in that direction myself. They aren't said yet, too. Haven't you heard? She told most people. Now it'll look as if I got turned down for a white rat in a dog collar.
Oh, too bad.
Oh, fortune of war.
Yeah, fortune of war. Odd how it happens, isn't it? Sit down, Smollett. Millicent, console Captain Smollett with your best light conversation. You too, Mother. George and I have something to look at outside. This rain, you know, but it is bad, very bad. Come, George.
Right, old Governor. Maybe we'll need raincoats. What?
Oh, I don't think so. Just make yourself at home, Smollett. Make yourself at home.
A cigarette, Captain Smollett?
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, not the day to be going out.
Something about the old well, just off the sun porch door, you know. The terrible sodden weather seems to have loosened some of the stones.
Oh, too bad. Dash too bad. Spoils the tennis and croquet, I mean, a day like this. Doesn't it, Millie? Doesn't it, Millie?
Oh, yes, it does. She was practicing out on the croquet court earlier, but, oh, do pull your chair nearer the fire, Captain. It was so damp, we thought it would be cozy to light it.
Thank you, I'm quite comfortable.
I hope you don't feel too bad about Ella, David.
Can't always win. Can't say, though, what you women see in these bloodless clerics.
Oh, I always thought Mr. Withers was, he is a very charming man.
Quite agreed. Why should anyone want to marry him? You wouldn't want to marry him, would you, Millie?
Not now. Very rough. Are you? Oh. Oh, no. Oh, God.
Mollet. Yes, Prince. Good Lord, man, you come in on a fellow suddenly.
Yes, I did. Oh, don't mind this old double-barrel shotgun. Been working on it. Mollet, may I have your attention for a minute? There's something on the front porch I'd like to show you.
Why, yes, of course.
Mollet, George and I went out to see if we could shoot some rats which have been driven out of the old well by the high water. Afraid they might get into the house. Now, you must listen to me very carefully. Very carefully, or you will be shot by accident.
Princey, what got into you?
You heard me ask as you came in, who would kill Withers? You also heard Millicent make a comment, an unguarded comment.
Well, what of it?
Very little. Unless you were to hear that Withers had met a violent end this very afternoon. And that, my dear Smollett, is what you are going to hear.
What? Withers?
Yes.
Who killed him?
Millicent.
Good Lord.
Yes, it's a mess. And of course, you would have remembered and guessed.
Maybe, yes. Yes, I suppose I should.
Therefore, you constitute a problem.
Why did she kill him?
Oh, it's one of those disgusting things. Pitiable, too. She deluded herself that he was in love with her.
Oh, yes, really. Oh, yes, of course. I see.
He had told her about the Davis girl.
I understand.
Now, I have no wish, as you will comprehend, that she should be proved either a lunatic or a murderer. I could hardly go on living here after that.
I suppose not.
On the other hand, you know about it.
Yes, I see that. Makes me a problem. You're wondering if I could keep my mouth shut. If I promise...
I am wondering if I could believe you.
But if I promise...
If things went smoothly, yes. But not if there was any sort of suspicion, any questioning. You would be afraid of being an accessory.
Why, I don't know.
I do. What are we going to do?
I can't see anything else. You'd never be fool enough to do me in. You can't get rid of two corpses.
Oh, I regard it as a better risk than the other. It could be an accident. Or you and Withers could both disappear. There are possibilities in that.
Listen, you can't.
I can, but there may be a way out. There is. Smollett, you gave it to me yourself.
I did what?
You said you would kill Withers. You have a motive.
Oh, look here, I was joking. Of course you saw that.
You are always joking. Listen, Smollett, I can't trust you. You must trust me, else I will kill you now in the next minute. I mean that. You can choose between dying and living.
Go on.
Now, there's the old well just outside the front porch door. That's where I'm going to put Withers. No one outside knows he has come up here this afternoon. No one will ever look there for him unless you tell them. You must give me evidence that you have murdered Withers.
I murdered him? Why do you want that?
So that I shall be dead sure that you will never open your lips on the subject.
I see. What evidence?
George, hit him in the face.
Sure.
Keep out of it.
Captain, you should be more careful. Look what your teeth did to my knuckles.
Again, George.
Okay.
I can't stand this. All out.
Keep quiet. You women, keep out of it. I'm sorry, Smollett, but there must be traces of a struggle between you and Withers. Then it will not be altogether safe for you to go to the police.
But can't you take my word, man?
I will when we are finished. George,
yeah?
Get the cokey, Mary.
Right, Governor.
Take your handkerchief to it. In there, on the front porch floor.
Yeah. I got it, Governor. There, Captain. There's the weapon.
As I told you, Smollett. Now, you'll just grasp the end that mashed Withers' head. I shall shoot you if you don't.
But good Lord, you can't. All right.
There. I'll deposit it out by the side of the house, out of the rain, of course. No, wait, George. First, you'd better pull a few hairs out of his head and put them under the nails of Withers' right hand.
Prince, have you gone mad? Do you know what you're doing?
With this gun, yes. Go ahead, George.
Sorry to mess your hair up, Captain.
Shut up, Smollett.
There. That's all we need. Now, for Withers, we'll fix it right up. Be right with you, Governor.
Smollett, you may turn around. Withers is just there in the sun porch. Draw back the curtain. Yes, messy. But we'll get him fixed up. Now, you, Tommy, you've just got to drag him through the door and dump him in the old well.
Just beyond the door, Captain.
I won't touch him. I won't try.
All right. Stand aside. Out of range, George.
Right.
Only one place I want this bullet to go.
Father.
Keep quiet. My aim's none too good.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Better, Molly. Much better. Go on now. In here. You'll have to take him outside.
By the shoulders ought to do it, Captain.
Keep quiet, George. Go on, Molly. Go on. You've seen dead men before. Crack him. Crack him. I'll just hold the gun here to make sure that everything goes on.
Come away from the dingy window, dear. Don't look. But, Captain Smollett, your father is a very resourceful man, there is one. I'm sure what he's doing is right. But the Captain, I can't stand with him. I mustn't question your dear father.
I say, are you two still at it? There's enough trouble around here without blubbering.
I'm not blubbering, George.
Oh,
they never look in our way. You see how sensitive? I guess it is. Oh, good heavens, man, look, you're dripping wet. Why didn't you slip your raincoat on?
Tea ready, my dear?
Just a minute, dear. I'll ring for Bridget.
Exactly what you need, Mullet. Cup of tea. Best thing in the world to ward off a cold.
Sit down, won't you? Don't mind getting the chair wet.
Cigarette?
Help yourself. I stick to my pipe, you know. Funny how...
Princess, everything's hot, ma'am.
Now, Bridget, here. Put the tray in front of me, here, on the table.
Yes, ma'am.
That's it.
I say, Captain, you've gone and cut your lip.
I just knocked it.
Oh, how dreadful. Here, Bridget, give the Captain this cup.
No, no, thank you. I rather think I'll be running along now, if you don't mind.
Oh, Captain Smollett, would I send you tea?
If you don't mind, Mrs. Princess. If I could just have my raincoat.
Oh, I'll get it for you, Captain.
Oh, this is very distressing, Smollett, very.
Oh, I'll be all right presently, I'm sure.
Here we are. Now, let me help you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, young man.
Claire.
I'd better go out the front way, Smollett. The walk is dry.
Oh, let me hold the door for you, Captain.
Don't worry, old fellow. Don't worry at all. Nothing serious, I imagine. You go rest and you'll be as right as rain. By the way, Millicent, you're not looking any too well.
No, not well at all. I'm sure it was that croaky cough. Being outdoors in weather like this is simply foolhardy.
The maid is right, Millie. You saw what happened to Captain Smollett. Oh,
come along, dear. I shall give you a hot foot bath and put you to bed. And a couple of days in the bed, and you'll be fine, dear.
Get plenty of rest, Millicent, and don't worry about a thing. That's the best cure.
Well, I guess I'll have a little rest too, Governor. It's a fine afternoon for a nap.
Indeed it is, son. Well, enjoy yourself. I'll see you later. I'll see you all later.
John Dunlop, dear.
Oh, would you get me the police station, please?
Police station? Right away, sir.
Police headquarters, Sergeant Yen speaking.
Oh, hello, Sergeant. This is Prince here, Abbott's Road. I believe you know me.
Indeed, I do, Mr. Prince.
Sergeant, a horrible thing has just happened. Quite extraordinary. Murder, in fact.
Murder?
I'm afraid it looks rather bad for a close friend of ours, unfortunately. We saw him do it. I think you'd better send someone over right away.
Our man should be there right about now, Mr. Prince.
I beg your pardon?
I say, our man should be there now. Constable Martin has his post right below your house there. Just rang in. Seems Captain Smollett was with him.
Captain Smollett?
They reported some rather queer going down at your place, but I certainly didn't understand it was murder. The doctor
No. I won't, Sergeant. Thank you.
Governor, where are you?
I'm right here. Stop shouting.
We have some visitors, Governor.
Oh, yes. Yes, I can see that. Well, Constable, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Trinity.
And Mollett, I see what a remarkable fellow you are, coming back like this. Here to reenact the crime?
Only the one against me, Princey. The one against the curate I'll leave to you people.
Extraordinary sense of humor.
Mr. Princey, I just had a look at what's in your well. Not a pretty sight, that. Not pretty at all.
Yes, Captain Smollett was thorough, if nothing else.
You saw him when he did it, sir, out in the back?
No, quite. We were just returning from a walk. Smollett evidently had been laying for the curate, hiding out in those bushes by the road, I imagine.
He was never inside this house.
Never.
And you say, Captain?
I say that while I was inside this house, a guest of the family, I was coerced into dragging the curate's body outside and dumping it in the well.
Well, there we are.
Not entirely, Constable. I just removed my raincoat. There. And demonstrate how damp I got my clothes when I went outside without it.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
Quite. He undoubtedly removed his coat at some point between here and your post. I might as well tell you that his weapon, a red croquet mallet, is out by the side of the house. I shouldn't be at all surprised because you'd find his fingerprints all over it.
All over the end of the mallet, Constable. The end that mashed Withers' his head. Not the end I'd have had to grasp in order to do the mashing.
Governor!
That's a decent try, Smollett. But it won't work. There must be other evidences, Constable. You'll undoubtedly find them when you examine the body.
Well, he means my hair under Withers' nails. Well, sir, if you look carefully, I believe you'll find a few of my precious hairs under his son's nails, too.
Here, what are you trying to... Constable, this is an utter waste of time. So far as the violent struggle between Smollett and Withers is concerned, Smollett's face speaks for itself. Quite eloquently, I believe.
Oh, but no more eloquently than your son's knuckles. As you see, Constable, a fresh abrasion. He did that on my teeth. Or did he?
What?
I say, or did he? He might have done that on Withers' teeth.
Oh, I see. I see what you mean.
But I didn't. Governor, he said I'll
keep still, you nitwit. Let me think.
As a matter of fact, George, the more I think of it, the more I'm convinced it was your voice I heard. Quite a vigorous quarrel. Something about the curate jilting your sister.
Oh, don't be ridiculous, Smollett.
Very well, Princey. If your son didn't do it, who did?
That's what I'd like to know. How about it, Mr. Princey?
Well, that is a sticker, all right.
George, my boy, it looks like you're elected.
Elected? What do you mean? I didn't do it. Why, I had nothing to do.
Keep your mouth shut, will you?
I won't. I'm not going to take the blame for her. Millie did it. She did it with that mallet, I saw.
You could prove that?
Prove it? Her fingerprints on the mallet, the handle.
Why, George, don't you remember when you made me touch the mallet? When you picked it up with your handkerchief?
No,
George, I'm sure you wiped that handle clean. Oh, well, I could hardly expect you to remember that if you can't even remember killing the curate.
Governor,
I told you to keep still.
But Governor, you're not going to turn me over.
Long as I can remember, George, you've been a trial and a tribulation to me.
Governor,
you shouldn't have done it, son. You really shouldn't.
No, George, that was definitely wrong. I say, Princey, I think I'll have that cup of tea after all. Nothing like it in weather like this.
Wet Saturday, from the short story by John Collier. You have just heard the second in Columbia's new series, a series designed to bring you the best in thrill entertainment. Outstanding dramas from the field of fiction and radio, stage and screen. Dramas of pure suspense. This Columbia feature is produced and directed by Charles Vanda, with scripts by Harold Medford and score by Bernard Herrmann. Be with us again next week at this same time when we present Suspense. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not. One great quirk in marine biology is the porpoise. They have as many as 96 teeth, yet they swallow their food whole. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about a queen who was one of history's great killjoys. Theatergoers and playwrights alike had a long, long wait between seasons during part of the reign of Queen Marie Anne of Spain. Because she considered her son, the 4-year-old King Charles II, too young to understand such things as theatrical drama, the queen closed every theater in the country. Her reason was simple. If the king of Spain couldn't go to the theater, then the king's subjects shouldn't go to the theater either. Believe it or not.
And now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. In a moment, Act One of Hide and Seek, starring Jackson Beck and William Redfield, and written especially for Suspense by Bob Corcoran. This first portion of Suspense is brought to you by the makers of Marlboro cigarettes. Why don't you settle back and have a full-flavored smoke? Have a Marlboro. You get a lot to like with a Marlboro, the filter cigarette with the unfiltered taste. Try Marlboro. The lost soul cry of a lake steamer fell into the sleeping Chicago street like a wet feather, sending out ripples of fear that washed against a dandy man who would soon die. A nerve kept jumping under his eye. His hands were sticky. He stared out the window, forcing himself to go through the routine he created, and stop at the all-night cigar store, no matter how late, and have his shoes shined so he could go home with a clean pair. It was one of the reasons they called him Dandy. But he wasn't enjoying it tonight, and never would again. He came off the shoe-shine chair like a dancer, moved to the door of the store. Nothing either way. A half dollar glittered in the light and disappeared as the boy snapped it out of the air.
Thanks, kid.
Thank you, Mrs. Angeles.
The street stretched ahead. Parked cars, empty. Some old newspaper blowing. Big city tumbleweed. Dandy caught his reflection in a store window and had to stop in spite of his nervousness and desire to get away. The practiced hand rolled the brim of his hat, and the Windsor knot of his tie got pushed to perfection.
Yeah.
No wonder they called him Dandy. Neat as a pin. Even his fingernails. Even his fingernails. Dandy thought of that afternoon, and his mouth twisted in self-disgust as he cut across the street and hurried on, keeping near the curb and watching the shadows. A jerk play. Like a luck-happy punk instead of a professional gambler. Just a few more blocks to go and nothing had happened. He felt a little easier, but he had to get 1,000 fast. Bigelow didn't like guys who played and then didn't make good on the sour ones. He had a long list of things he didn't like, and that was on top. Dandy knew that when he made the bet that afternoon.
You got it, though, ain't you, Dandy?
Yeah, sure, Ed. I just ain't got it on me.
If you pick a cruller, I want that money.
Sure, Ed.
I want it fast.
Hey, what am I, the thief of Baghdad? I always been good, ain't I?
Yeah, you always been good, Dandy. It's just we're friends. I don't want you should welch on me, that's all.
I ain't no welcher.
I know a guy who was no killer. Till he knocked off a guy.
I won't welch, Ed.
That's good. Because if you did, I'd lose a friend. And all your friends would lose a friend. Permanent.
Okay. Don't worry. It's a sure thing.
The horse finished fifth. Nowhere. But he'd get the money. Sure. Take maybe a week. Guys forget your name fast when you're broke. But nothing to worry about. His hotel awning invited him just ahead. Maybe he'd get out of town for a few days. Not that there was anything to be afraid of, just hedge his bet. Play it safe. He breezed into the hotel lobby. Thank God it was empty. Then the ripples of fear came back when he saw the scared-faced kid at the desk.
What's the matter, Herbie?
Well, there's a guy waiting for you. He's in your room. He belted me and took the key. Told me not to tell the cops or you nothing. But you always been nice to me.
It's all right, Herbie. It's all right. What's he look like?
Oh, he's a real big guy. Fat, but big.
Thanks, kid. I'll make it up to you later.
He fought to keep calm. No time to turn into a panic man. Stiff-armed the door and got into the street. His hand measured the few bills in his pocket. He wondered how far they'd take him. Bigelow was closing in. Then a piece of shadow split away from the wall.
Hello, Dandy. The kid tell you about Bigelow's friend waiting for you inside?
I don't know what you're talking about.
But not about the one waiting outside, huh?
The man was tall and thin, skinny even. He looked as if they'd made his face, forgotten the mouth, and then torn one. Dandy tried to move around him.
Let's get my buddy, then we'll go see it. When I say move, move.
Dandy fought his fear as he watched the elevator arrow swing down. He was tall and fat. His eyes looked as if someone had tried to hide two grapes in some dirty grease.
You got him. Good. Yeah, he was taken off. This punk here must have told him he was in his room.
You do that, punk? Huh? Don't matter, we got him. You're gonna keep your mouth shut about this, ain't you?
Leave him alone.
Shut up, Dandy man. I won't save you for Bigelow. Kid, you say anything, this is just a sample of what you'll get. Let's go.
Where are we going?
Ed Bigelow wants to talk to you.
What's Ed want with me?
Do you hear that, Earl?
A conical tin shade hung over the desk. Everything had a coating of dirt, as if Bigelow had had the place sprayed with it. Dandy was very careful not to touch or rub up against anything.
Nice to see you, Dandy. It's always nice to see you. Always so sharp. The Dandy man. Soup must have cost you plenty. Me, I'm just a slob. No $200 suits for me. A ready-made from Joe the Tailor in Madison. Just a slob. But I pay my debts. Where's my money, Dandy?
Well, you see, Ed,
No conversation. I can get that any time with the boys here.
But I want to tell you...
You got the $1,000? Yes or no?
Oh, now listen, Ed.
Answer like he says.
We don't like to be rough, Dandy. We're friends. What's the answer?
No, I ain't got it. I can get it for you, Ed. I ain't no Welsher. I mean, ask anyone in town.
You told me you had it.
I figured wrong.
How come you figured wrong?
I didn't know how far I'd gone. I laid out a lot of bets.
The whole roll, huh? Kiss in the dark. You too can be a winner.
Anybody can play.
And you did it on my market, Dandy.
Well, not all of it.
Thousand of it. I don't like to be played for no chump. I don't like you should be gambling with my money.
Just, give me a week. 7 days. 6. 5 even. Tomorrow I'll have it.
Chicago's hard in reputations, Dandy. One guy does it to me, and maybe some others think I'm losing my grip. It'd be bad if word got around somebody played me for a patsy. Is that right, fellas?
Yeah, like you say.
I shouldn't have spread the bet so thin. Should have kept out a little. I'll have to pay off that Bigelow.
I'll get it, I tell you.
Point is, you should have had it. Like you said.
Oh, Ed, what's a thousand to you? You got...
Ain't no use, Standy. Like they say down at the courthouse, you gotta be made an example of.
You... You wouldn't kill me.
I don't want to be hard. I'll tell you what. I'll leave it up to the boys.
Plant them. Take the bloom off the dandy man.
Get him out of here.
Now, take that watch, Dandy. You won't be needing it. I'll match you for it. Sure, I ain't greedy.
We're, going out to the forest preserve, huh? A nice drive into the country.
Well, it's peaceful out there. You'll get a nice rest.
You're caught.
A joker. Yeah, we go down Clark Street, see? To North Avenue and then west to the country. We park a little, and we come back. Me and Lloyd, that is.
Out North Avenue, right through the old neighborhood, his mind raced ahead. Forgotten details of dirt and squalor struggled forward from the shadows where he'd pushed them. The streets, the alleys. Then it hit him. The police station on Blackhawk. If he could get out of the car, run to the station. He'd have to make the break when the car was moving. Time it just right. There was only one street that cut into North Avenue that'd do him any good, Sedgwick. Then halfway down the block, into the alley, and through the vacant lot at the end. The car couldn't follow. Then a half block more to the police station, and he'd be safe. And then suddenly he saw the battered old black-on-yellow sign as the car entered the intersection. Sedgwick. Sandy hit the door, then the street bent over, running, crawling into a tin newsstand. Then he was on his feet, running. The car wrenched around like a giant crab and then leaped down the street. They didn't shoot. Dandy's hand hooked a no parking sign and he swung into the alley without slowing. Then he knew something was wrong. He looked up and saw. There was a building at the end of the alley where the vacant lot had been. He whirled around. The warehouse stretched back to the street on one side. The other had store backs. Solid. No fences. The backbone of the elevated track cut over the end of the alley. A dirty bulb burned on the warehouse fire escape that crawled up the side of the building like a steel vine, dead, just out of reach. He pivoted and ran back to the back of the alley, softly, softly. Hide and seek. Now, he'd played it here before. It was a restaurant that blocked the alley. As he moved in among the garbage cans, his nose wrinkled. Two shadows moved along the warehouse wall, bottling him up. There were four garbage cans, then a space, then some more. The shadow was deepest right behind them. Dandy knelt down, then slid out flat. His soft, manicured hands quivered from what he felt under them. He tried to hold his breath.
Let's get him.
There might be any place in there.
Well, you could stay here and I could look.
He's too fast. I don't want to shoot at a distance. Bigelow's paying us, to be sure. I want to put the gun right in the middle of that suit and burn it. Go for him now, there'd be too much noise.
Well, maybe an elevator comes along and covers the noise.
Still a chance. Danny ain't worth it.
Yeah, that's right.
And there was a drugstore back where he jumped out. Call Frank. Tell him to bring another guy. And it'll be quiet and sure. We can go on out to the country like Bigelow wants it.
Okay.
Hey, wait a minute. You want to come out now? It'll be easier. We gotta go to a lot of trouble. It's gonna make us mad.
The skinny man took a drag on his cigarette. His Dandy could see it wink and then glow bright red. A long finger flipped it in a gentle arc over the cans into the deep shadows. It hissed and went out as it hit the muck.
We'll use them on you, Dandy. We'll cook you a little at a time.
You, You love me.
Stall. Pray for a break.
Why don't you play it smart, Dandy? Take off. If he tries to go past me, the shots won't make no difference. I'll pick camp in the corner, heading north.
Okay.
Hey, get some cigarettes. We want to have plenty.
And Dandy remembered. He'd get out after all. The 100-to-1 shot suddenly turned into a boat race. He remembered when he was a kid. The cops would come along on their way to the station. Sure, that wouldn't be changed. It was routine. Cops never change routine. They get fat on it. When the cops came, he'd holler. And they'd get the two who'd been pushing him around.
Go ahead. Wait. Fat man.
I'll be right over. I got the cigarettes and matches. Lots of matches.
They're playing hard to get.
He's gonna wish he hadn't.
Dandy grinned as he thought of the cups, and then suddenly realized how much his back ached from holding his head out of the slop and tin cans. He thought of his suit and his shirt and his hand-painted silk tie, and what his friends would say if they could see Dandy DeAngelis laid out in this sewer. The smell flooded in on him, and he gritted his teeth. He didn't want to lie in that, too. It was the first time he'd ever wished he was on an elevated. But the cops would be here any second. He didn't know what made him turn his head. He just lifted his cheek off his hand and swiveled his head around.
Oh!
The skin went tight all over his body, and he almost screamed and jumped up. But instead, he froze and stared. Just 2 feet away, its head just emerging into the light, was an enormous rat. He hated them. Worse than anything, he hated them. When he was a kid, he'd always been afraid of them. They were the old tenement, the dank hallways and crowded rooms, the dirty smells that got into your skin and stayed there. He'd been bitten as a boy and never gotten over it.
Oh, what am I gonna do?
He thought he'd left all that behind him. But he hadn't. Dandy DeAngelis, the dandy man, lying in filth, staring at a rat. If he made a sound, they'd move in on him. And then the matches and cigarettes and gun in the stomach.
Easy, dandy boy. Easy.
If it meant his life, he'd stay there with a rat. Sure.
What can I do? What can I do?
It moved a few inches into the light, hugging the garbage can on the other side of the open space. It was a foot long and heavy. He remembered when he was a kid and they'd kill one. The filth into the fleas. That had been bad enough. But then, rats were dirty shadows that hugged the wall and ran. This one was on the same level with him, hugging the same wall. He'd come down a long way.
Anytime you're ready, Dandy.
I guess he likes playing in that mess.
There was a little breeze, and he saw the fur on its back move. He felt sick again. It hunched itself around. Dandy started back in spite of himself, in spite of the men waiting for him to make a sound. It didn't run at his slight motion. Dandy held his breath. He was so close to it, he could even see the rings on its tail. It moved again, and this time faced right at him. The beady eyes seemed to stare right into his own. The thin-skinned ears stood upright and straight. Dandy could see the fleas crawling. It lifted its head, and Dandy saw the teeth that never stopped growing but get worn down and sharpened all the time. The spot on his hand where he'd been bitten as a kid started to burn.
Get away. Get away.
Dandy tried to move back. He was afraid to scare it for fear it would scuttle off over the cans and bottles and attract the two waiting to kill him. He reached out to the side and back. His right hand closed on a milk bottle. He gripped the neck and slowly, watching the rat, brought the bottle up beside his head, his arm cocked. He stayed there, trying not to jump up and run away from it, trying to wait for it. He hadn't been watching.
Keeping those guys. They say they'd be right over.
Take it easy. You're getting anxious to get your hands on the punk, huh?
And get it over with.
Sandy realized with relief that he'd have heard the cops if they'd gone by. They were always loud, but they'd better hurry. He swung his head slowly back to the rat. As he did, his skin crawled. If there was one rat, there were one more. He looked to the side, dreading what he would see. But there was nothing. It moved toward him. He stopped breathing and waited. It hunched there, watching him. Maybe it thought he was dead. He'd heard about dead people and rats. Maybe it wanted the warmth. It crouched there, evil, foul, staring at him.
No. No.
Sandy forgot the men in the alley, the burning cigarettes and the gun held close to his belly. He forgot the cops who were going to come any minute if he just lie quietly as he was. All he could think of was that he was Dandy DeAngelis, lying there in front of a rat. The old neighborhood was still there, waiting for him all these years. He hadn't gotten away after all.
No!
But he would get away. He swung the bottle invisible in its speed, swung it with all his might.
No!
Swung it with all the disgust and loathing and hatred that he felt. It didn't break. It hit something soft. He beat it and beat it and beat it and beat it. He didn't hear them as they moved over to him, their guns at his head.
Finished. Free.
Dandy stopped and stood up. He looked down at it as it lay in the light between the cans. It wouldn't bother him anymore. The old neighborhood and the dirt and the smells sank back, away, away. He dropped the bottle. He tried to wipe his hand.
Look at that. Dandy killed a rat. Yeah. Now it's our turn.
Suspense. You've been listening to Hide and Seek, starring Jackson Beck and William Redfield, and written especially for Suspense by Bob Corcoran. In a moment, a word about next week's story of Suspense. All of us see the product that comes out of Hollywood. What people like to know, though, is what goes on in Hollywood. The amusing anecdotes, the joys, the heartbreaks, life in this so untypical town. These and many other intriguing subjects provide Ralph Story's weekday Dimension Reports in Hollywood. Listening to this CBS Radio Network feature will bring you information and entertainment of Filmland. Your next date with Ralph's Story in Hollywood, tomorrow. Another CBS Radio Network Dimension feature is A Woman's World with Betty Furness. Three times each day, we send Betty your way. Produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr. Music supervision by Ethel Huber. Sound patterns by Joseph Cabibbo and Don Creed. Featured in tonight's story, Santos Ortega as Bigelow. Larry Haynes as Lloyd. Joseph Julian as Earl. And Jack Grimes as Herbie. Listen again next week when we return with Dagger of the Mind, written by John Robert. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
That's going to do it for the Relic Radio show for this week. I'll be back next Tuesday with another 60 minutes of old-time radio. Don't forget relicradio.com. In the meantime, for more old-time radio, all the podcasts are listed there and links to everything else Relic Radio. And don't forget, if you'd like to help support this show, you can do so from the website as well. I appreciate it if you're able to help out Thanks to those who have. That's going to do it for this week. We'll be back next Tuesday with a brand new episode of the Relic Radio Show.